From iHeartMedia, this is Missing in Alaska, the story of two congressmen who vanished in 1972 and my quest to figure out what happened to them. I'm your host, John Walczak. On October 15, 2019, right before I flew back to Anchorage with Paul Deccant, our supervising producer, I placed an important call. Paul and I, along with our captains, Mark and Andy, had just visited the exact spot in Port Etches where Bob Martinson found part of a Cessna tail sometime around 1980. We all had follow-up questions for Bob, so I put my phone on speaker and... Hey, Bob, I'm with Andy and Mark, and so
Hey, Bob.
So they had a few questions, and I figured before I left, they know the area better, that I would let them ask the questions. Is that okay?
Yeah, I'm not looking at the map. I'm driving, so, anyway, go ahead.
Okay, so drive carefully, Bob.
Yeah.
So our question, so we had gone into Port Etches and trying to help figure out a little bit more of this lead of where to look. And then we also had some specific questions. One of them, I guess we could start with that. Like, so you were seining, do you remember the boat you were seining on?
Yeah, I ended up owning that. That was my dad's boat, the Ocean Wave.
Ocean Wave, okay. And so how big is the Ocean Wave?
It was a 32-footer, like one of those Charlie Moore seine boats. Like, I don't know if you remember that, if you were around when the George A. and the Shirley H. and those kind of boats were around.
Yes, I know exactly what you're talking about. So
yeah, I had a seine permit, and I helped Dad build that boat. And it would have been that point or maybe the one out from it, but wherever it was, fairly clear beach.
Yeah, it looks like a really good seine set, right? The spot that you selected, like, it looked like it's right at the end of a nice scrape. Like, you could...
Yeah, that's, I don't remember which way we were hooking, but I brought it up in the lead, not very far from the beach, and it was the whole tail section. And like I told John, it didn't have any growth on it or anything. It looked fairly recent, but when I called troopers to report it, they said the numbers came real close to what they were looking for that crash.
Huh.
So I think I remember putting it on a tender because we were still fishing, you know, and it wasn't like the days when you go back and forth. It was when we were fishing all week long.
Yeah, you couldn't store it or anything.
But, I mean, they would have taken up a huge part of the back deck. Or how big of a chunk did you find?
It was the whole upright tail section. The part that sticks up.
I gotcha.
And it was shredded, like it was sheared off right at the bottom of the upright.
Yep.
And, you know, big sharp shards of metal on it. And it had, I don't know if it had all the number, or I recall that they said it might have been one number off or something, but they wanted to see it, and I think it was red and white.
Okay.
And I also know that my friend Mike Crawley, he died right near there, crashing his plane into the cliff, but that was later, I believe.
Is that
He fished with Butch Johnson.
Is that the 185?
That might have been what he was flying. He was spotting for him and Butch Johnson, and he was over a big school inside of Constantine, and he was losing elevation because he was circling, and then he slammed into a cliff, and that plane was pretty much destroyed. I don't know if it landed on the beach or went in the water, but it wouldn't have been that plane, I don't think. I think it was earlier than that I found it.
So that area that we were, was that the right spot?
Yeah, that's the right spot. So when we had just, these guys were asking us, you know, who might have been around, might have been in the search. And so we went and talked to Terry Kennedy, and he told us, I think, of that plane that you were talking about, the spotter. And he he had actually trained with the pilot Don Johns and had some interesting info, was flying that very day and had been contacted about the weather and some other stuff. But yeah, so we were in the right area, sounds like.
Yeah, I don't know. You know, I don't have any idea exactly what year that was, but the crash happened in 72, and it was probably around 80, 81, somewhere maybe before that. I started sailing in 73 with my dad.
Uh-huh.
And I'm pretty sure I was with my dad at that time, so it was pre-80, I would guess.
You don't happen to remember that piece? It ended up on a tender, and then any chance of remembering the name of that tender?
No, but it took me a while to even think about, you know, what happened to it. I knew somebody took it, and then I thought, well, it would have been a tender, because that's the only ones going back to town.
Right.
And I don't know who the trooper was around town then. I think it was before Jim Cavan was there.
Do you remember a guy named Bill Bagron or Bagron?
Yeah, he was the police chief.
Yeah, mm-hmm.
Yeah, I knew his daughter, Julie.
Yeah, he's since passed away, but I was trying to find names of people who you might have talked to.
Well, I think I talked to the trooper's office because, you know, pretty serious when you find a piece of a plane, and they wanted to see it, and we had no way to bring it at that time without, you know, giving up our season.
So what company did you fish for? Were you fishing for a specific processor?
Well, we used to always fish for Morpac, but I don't know when Morpac turned into Copper River Seafoods.
Oh,
so,
but that was...
we might investigate that.
That would have been... I mean, that was well after I got here. It was still Morpac, so, I mean, that would have been in the 90s at some point. But
well, I was just thinking if some old-timer, if it was, you know, our fishmonger could remember something about, oh, yeah, it came in on a tender and, you know, and something of that nature.
Oh, it was so long ago that this happened, I can't possibly remember which tender we had.
Yeah. Well, the processor might remember if there's some old retiree that might remember who was taking fish in that area. Maybe, you know, I know it's kind of a long shot, of course, but...
Yeah, my dad was pretty faithful to whatever company he fished for. You know, he was with Parks and Western before it turned into Morpac, and then stayed with them. And you know, New England had tenders out there at that time, and they did some co-tendering with Morpac too. Hmm. They had a lot of those scows. I know Jim Rockham lives down here by me, and he ran one of those same tenders.
Bob, how confident are you that you put it on a tender versus just leaving it be and taking the numbers?
Oh no, I didn't throw it away. I remember somebody taking it, and it would have been a tender, you know.
Yeah. Do you remember when you called the numbers, you talked to the troopers, and they expressed interest in it being this plane? Do you know if it was just like a casual, like, ooh, maybe this is related to it, or were they pretty seriously interested that this could actually be accurate numbers?
Yeah, they were the ones that brought it up. Apparently, you know, it was on their radar that the plane was missing somewhere in that area. And, you know, they're the ones that told me about it. I was shocked when they said that.
But do you remember if that was based on, like, a general suspicion it might be the plane, or if they told you that after they saw the numbers?
I remember them saying something about the number being real close to what they were looking for. So, you know, it beats me what year that was.
But you said around 1980?
Well, I think so, you know.
And you said you think it was roughly four numbers that were visible?
No, I think there were five or six. How many are on a tail?
Six on a tail.
Yeah, it was pretty much the whole tail section. You know, it was shredded at the bottom, like I said, and that's kind of where the number ran.
Well, it's really fascinating if they did base that suspicion that it was the missing plane on the characters, and you had four or five of the six characters. I mean, that would definitively saying that it was from that plane.
Well, I'm curious, was it a red and white plane? Do you remember?
It was white and like burnt orange. So I haven't found any photos of it, and I've been asking people. But yeah, I know it was white and orange.
It could be. I mean, orange. Yeah.
Okay, well, I'm shade blind. I'm color blind, so orange could have been red to me.
Yeah. Well. I mean, I was really fascinated when you emailed me in 2015, and then we made it over to Cordova, and we met Andy and Mark, and I had no idea that they knew you. So it's been an interesting experience. We went out into Port Etches, and we want to come back with more equipment. So we had a limited amount of time, and we used the ROVs. But do y'all have any other, Mark and Andy, do you guys have any other questions?
No.
So did it seem to be off of that smooth, you were talking about like the scour?
Yeah, no, it made sense from what Bob was saying about, you know, where you do a scrape for a seine that...
And where you don't.
And where you don't. And
yeah.
And we surveyed the area where you'd scrape, and then we got into the eelgrass where you don't, because it's all jaggedy rock and that were, you know, that...
I was going to say, I remember a lot of rocks on the outside of that area.
Yeah,
and we were looking for a place we could set, you know, and you want to be on the furthest out spot so you get more reach, you know.
Yeah, and it's the perfect little spit that kind of, well, point, whatever, that comes out there. Nice, smooth gravel beach, as far as we could see into the water. It looked really nice and looked like it was really clean of growth, like it's regularly used for seining. So, and then as soon as we got to the rocks, we got into lots of eelgrass and kelp and things like that. So we pretty confident we were in the spot that you were talking about.
Yeah, we used to set all the time across the mouth of Constantine at high water, and we'd catch so many fish that the net wouldn't even move. It'd just be sitting on bottom, and the tender would have to come in and scoop them out right there. And you know, occasionally we fished over in that spot where I got the tail, but that wasn't like a regularly fished spot back then.
Yeah, I don't even know if they let them go up into the that tight anymore, but up into the mouth of the harbor. I'm not sure.
There were markers at the mouth. That's where we set.
Oh, that was the marker set. Okay. Huh. Yeah. Well.
Yeah.
Neat spot. And before the hatcheries, that would have been a.
We had to pick up before we got to that golf tee looking rock out below it, and you know, it was nice when we caught so many fish that the net didn't move.
Yep, pin you right there. That's cool.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, thank you, Bob. Y'all have any other questions?
No.
Okay, I appreciate it, Bob. Thanks for talking to us again.
Yeah, okay. Well, good luck, guys.
Okay, thanks so much.
Thanks, Bob. See you in the spring.
Yeah, take care. Good winter. Bye.
That was so he remembers what the trooper's reaction was. So it's... It got here.
So... There's quite a bit of difference there that what I was thinking when he said the whole tail section. I was thinking of this part of the plane.
I probably didn't convey it well enough. I'm sorry.
Just the top of the tail.
Yeah.
And then looking at the Cessna 310s, you can see that sometimes the number is up here.
The big picture is got.
Most of the time, the number is down there.
Yeah, and that's why I've been trying to find a picture of the actual plane. I haven't found any yet.
There's a 310 with its own tail.
And some of it, it's kind of like right there. Yeah.
This one.
That's the piece.
Yeah, this one I pulled up because if you broke that off, and it was ripped off, you might be able to get most of the numbers.
Well, what's interesting too, that says 1957. I think the 310C was 59, so that's close to when the C would have been produced.
And a lot of them have it, the number is down here. And then some have it way up there. So the number moves around, which is good to know.
Yeah, it would be very fascinating now to find a picture of the plane, because if you found a picture of the plane and the number was a little bit further up where it would have been on like the upright piece, I mean, that would at least wouldn't preclude the piece that Bob found from being the right one.
Well, that's a really interesting little more clarification. The piece got here, obviously. So it's like, who cares? I mean, you know, it's not, I mean, we know it got here, so did he give it to a tender or to another saner coming back because it broke down or something?
This is can I ask a question? Would there be a possibility that someone maybe would have, like, scrapped it to get money?
It's
not enough aluminum to work,
yes,
really.
You could pick it up by hand, probably.
Would somebody find more aluminum in my backyard?
Would somebody have, like, taken it and, like, I don't know, just not accidentally, but, like, just dumped it in their shed somewhere?
Sure.
And
possible.
I mean, they probably, I can't imagine them not taking it to the troopers, but.
Well, if they took it to the troopers, they probably kept it.
The troopers kept it?
Not that they didn't someday throw it away because it was taking up too much room. Yeah, I don't know what their process is. You know, they take a bunch of photographs of it. And maybe they don't need to keep it around. I don't know, but.
It's very fascinating now.
So he got to town. The troopers, according to his memories, thought it was a possible match at the very least. Five or six numbers, how could you not, like, going, well, that's it, or not? Yeah, I don't know.
You can reach us by phone at 1-833-MIA-TIPS. That's 1-833-642-8477. Again, 1-833-642-8477. Or you can reach us via email at tips@iheartmedia.com. That's tips, T-I-P-S, @iheartmedia.com. Ben Bolin is our executive producer. Paul Deccant is our supervising producer. Chris Brown is our assistant producer. Seth Nicholas Johnson is our producer. Sam Teagarden is our research assistant. And I'm your host and executive producer, John Walczak. You can find me on Twitter at John Walczak, JonWalczak. Special thanks to our captains, Mark and Andy, and to Bob Martinson. Missing in Alaska is a co-production of iHeartMedia and Greenfort Media.